You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
And tonight, regrettably, we are paying tribute to David McCallum, the actor who has passed away at the age of 92. This edition is another of our repurposed recordings. We have already recorded an episode on Sapphire and Steel. Is it story 5?
They didn't have on-screen titles, but this has been given the fan title, Dr. McD Must Die.
Well, this is in memoriam of David McCallum, and consulting the Oracle, I can see that he was a Scottish actor. He was actually born in Glasgow in 1933. Gained wide recognition in the 60s as Ilya Kuryakin in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Other notable roles include Simon Carter in Colditz, Steel in Sapphire and Steel, and also he was medical examiner Donald Mallard in NCIS, which, according to this, he played for 20 seasons until he died. But he was in any number of other things. He was never off the screen, sort of 70s and to an extent the 80s, but he was a very prolific actor. It says here, actually, that he reprised the role of Kuryakin in a 1983 TV film, The Return from The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Which isn't great.
I've got to admit, Man from U.N.C.L.E. has largely passed me by, but I think I was just too late. It was never really repeated, unfortunately, so I've only seen the odd one or two. And I seem to remember they were divided into, was it chapters or acts, and each one had a title, didn't it?
Yes, but they also had some edited together films, which is what I originally knew it from. I did kind of grow up on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was the Man from U.N.C.L.E. films rather than the TV series, which were cobbled together from two-part TV episodes. They're very much of their time, but they're entertainingly of their time. Used to be a sort of early evening film that we'd get plonked in front of when Mum was making the tea, and it was things like Man from U.N.C.L.E. or what was that Lee Marvin thing? Matt Helm was one, which is a sub-James Bond with Dean Martin, I think. The Invisible Man. I think that was the first thing I knew him from, the remake in the late 70s.
Oh, that, I must admit, I'm not familiar with.
One of the things I used to watch with my gran. I remember it being quite good. The thing I really know him from is Sapphire and Steel, and I loved Sapphire and Steel. I've said before, it's one of the few science fiction TV programmes that I prefer to Doctor Who.
But for the moment, we are going to hand over to our younger selves to watch Sapphire and Steel. Take it away, boys. Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton, and this is not just another edition. This is our fifth anniversary edition.
It is. 5 years at this.
Yeah. Now, traditionally, the fifth year anniversary gift is wood. Stop smirking.
Well, I am quite pleased to be here.
But there are sort of modern-y versions, one of which is sapphire jewellery. So what else could we do but the sublime Sapphire and Steel?
All irregularities will be handled by the forces controlling each dimension. Transuranic heavy elements may not be used where there is life. Medium atomic weights are available. Gold, lead, copper, jet, diamond, radium, sapphire, silver, and steel. Sapphire and steel have been assigned.
We're not watching the entire lot. We're going to watch Story 5, which is one of my absolute favourites. It's the only one that wasn't written by PJ Hammond. It's written by Don Horton.
Oh, Inferno.
Inferno. And it's very Agatha Christie-ish.
It's very Agatha Christie-ish.
Well, yes.
Mind you, this is Sapphire and Steel. We have previous with Sapphire and Steel, unfortunately. Although, well, not on tape.
Well, actually, we do have on tape, because one of the earliest In Memoriams that we did the fourth story, the one with the photographs.
That is true, yes. Oh, that was wonderful.
Which we gushed about.
Mm.
And then I scored a bit of an own goal, because we did the railway station, which I still say is a brilliant story, stretched over twice as many episodes as it needs to be, and did all of that in one hit. And my God, it was tedious.
Yeah. And then we lost the fucking recording.
Which is probably just as well.
Yeah. I feel sorry for Alan, who sat through that with me.
Alan puts up with an awful lot.
He's a saint. But anyway, we should...
I'm not sure I'd go that far.
Alan, you're a saint, mate. So, before we carry on, it's time to wave the tonic screwdriver in the direction of the drinks cabinet and get out a gin.
What we are going to be drinking is the Fireside Gin from the Poetic License Distillery. Now, we've had some Poetic License stuff before and really rather enjoyed it. And Fireside Gin just sounds nice and cosy and Agatha Christie by the fire.
This is a 40.1% gin, and the info bollock says, to be enjoyed while cozying up around the fireplace. Classic gin notes from juniper and coriander create a base for dried winter fruits and zingy clementine. Yes, perfect for an August day. The spice blend of cinnamon, clove and anise gives a warming flavour, sure to warm you from the inside out. Oh dear, anise. Oh, well, I love the sound of this thing. Fireside Gin. What a lovely, cosy little name. Dr. Exon, first things first, nasal appraisal, please.
It smells like anise.
It does, although the clove I can smell in that. Oh, well, eyes down.
Anise is what hits you first.
Well, neither of us are overly fond of it.
I like anise as long as it's not overdone. Both anise and clove are such strong powder. Mm. It's a bit like cardamom. You have to be so careful with how much you put in.
Well, let's find out. Oh, now that's nothing like as hideous.
Oh, indeed.
Yes.
You can still taste the anise.
Mm, certainly taste the clove. The cinnamon's in there as a temper, but that's not really very forward.
You're not really getting any gin barky bitterness.
Mm.
And there's no aftertaste at all.
This is very much a winter gin.
Spiced.
Yes. It is by the fire. This would be perfect by the fire. I do like it a lot. It's not quite five territory, but it's a good solid four. That will be lovely in winter.
Yes, I'm not quite as keen on it as you are. I think it's a safe four, but I'm not having to debate with myself about whether this is five or not. This is a fairly solid four.
Mm. But as with the other Poetic Licenses that we've had, it's nicely produced, nicely bottled, and they're good gins. We've not had one yet that we've not liked, I don't think. We had a Christmas one a couple of years ago, and we've had... the peaches and cream one. Or was it strawberries and cream? The picnic gin.
Strawberries and cream.
Mm. So they're all interesting. They're certainly not your run-of-the-mill gin range. I can recommend these. I think Poetic License, you'll be happy if you pick any of their bottles off the shelf. So yeah, thanks guys. So moving on, we will take our glasses.
With lovely warming gin in hand, shall we go and see Spaff?
Yes, keep us toasty on this Midsummer's Day. This is the Black Archive.
This is August.
Yes, an English August day. So through the sheet rain outside, we can see the very air that you breathe. Here we are in the Black Archive, surrounded by all the lost film and TV that's ever existed. And we're going to pick something off the shelf. What are we rescuing?
I think as this is an anniversary special, we should have a little treat.
Does Spaff need to be here for this?
Spaff always needs to be here.
Spaff, are you in here? Spaff! Oh, here he comes.
The apes have become dangerous. They must be destroyed.
Friendly as ever, Spaff. Anyway.
Why does he have jelly beans? Where's he getting these jelly beans from, and why don't we have any?
Can we have some?
I do not believe so.
Fine, be like that then. Well,
is your species the only intelligent life form?
Yes.
I shall destroy you if you defy me again.
Yes.
Be quiet.
Yep, all right, yep. Calm down. Fine.
So what I'm going to suggest is that we do a five-year best-of.
Mm.
So each of us can pick three episodes of Doctor Who.
Okay.
And three series.
Okay. And I'm going to let you go first because I think I know which one you're going to pick and I'm probably going to double up. So which episode of Doctor Who first?
Power of the Daleks one.
That was going to be one of my choices. So I'm going to go for the Massacre one. In fact, no, I'm not. I'm going to go for the Massacre 4.
Why?
Because it's an interesting episode. I'd like to see how they did the massacre scene. it also introduces Dodo. And there's a lovely bit of argumentative interplay between the Doctor and Stephen in that episode as well, which I think would be interesting to see.
And that wonderful scene where Stephen stormed out and he's on his own and Hartnell's doing the none of them could understand, not even my little Susan. Mm-hmm.
Power One, excellent choice, though. That is top of my list of things to come back. I'd love to see that.
Right.
Next choice?
Moonbase Episode 3. I love the Moonbase. It is Polly at her absolute finest doing the cocktail Polly chemistry thing. I adored that sequence. When I first read it in the book, I was doing my A-level chemistry at the time and got quite drawn into the whole chemistry experiment thing, to the point that I spent another 20 years working in chemistry. I just think it's a beautifully crafted episode. It is one of my favourite stories from my favourite season with my favourite TARDIS team plus Jamie. Moonbase 3.
Well, my next choice is going to be Marco Polo 1. I love Marco Polo. I know you're not quite as keen as I am.
It probably looks wonderful.
Yeah.
But the audio is paint drying.
Oh, no, you see, I've always been really thrilled by the audio. It just feels really expansive, the whole story. And every week it's a different location. I'd probably be disappointed by one as a choice, but I'd like to see how it all started, because half of it's set up a mountain in the snow, so the sets aren't going to be all that colourful. But it's just such a lovely story that I want to see it. What's your final pick?
I'm torn. Because on the one hand, I'd love to see an episode of Macroterra. But what I'm going to go for is the thing that I would most like to see back in the archives, and that's Power 6. So in my top three, I've got two episodes of Power of the Daleks.
Well, I'm also torn for my third choice.
You've just done your third choice with Marco Polo 1.
Well, what was my first then?
Power 1.
Oh, no, that doesn't count.
Yes, it does.
No,
you said we were both having that.
I'm allowing you Power 1, and since that's already rescued, my third and final choice.
Well, if we're doing that, then you can have Power 1 and I'll have another one.
I don't think so, old boy. I don't think so.
This is why we're both having Power 1. So, three non-Doctor Who stories.
Ooh,
three non-Doctor
Doctor
Who series.
Series.
And you can have the full series for this.
Well, top of the list is going to be Late Night Horror. The surviving episode that we've seen was absolutely nightmarish for the last 5% of it. I like being wrong-footed by stuff, and I like being cleverly surprised by a TV programme, and that, more than anything else that I can think of recently, properly got me that last scene. And having read the book that came with the Kaleidoscope DVD release...
Thank you, Kaleidoscope.
Oh, yes, thank you very much for that.
And not just for that one, they've released some wonderful, wonderful stuff. They've just done the Tony Hancock Show, so his first TV series.
Oh, yes.
His Lordship Entertains, and they've done one-off episodes of comedies and horror stuff. They don't put out anywhere near the amount of stuff as Network or BFI or something like that, but they're a much smaller outfit in terms of DVD releases, because it's not really their main focus. But what they do is fantastic, and that Late Night Horror release that they did had been cleaned up beautifully. The colour restoration was superb.
Well, the booklet that came with it detailed all the other episodes that they made.
And ones that they were planning to make.
Oh, good grief.
When the plug was pulled for being a bit too horrific.
Well, if you read some of the synopses for the other stories, they're horrible. Absolutely awful. There's one where there's a guy dying of cancer or something, and he's offered the chance by this doctor to remove his brain and one of his eyes so that he can... There's some way that they get that this brain can semi-communicate with the outside world. And so it's just this eye in a plastic cup floating in a tank of water and a brain. And they show it the Times every day to read and what have you. But his wife finally persuades them to let her take this brain home. And she just endlessly plays music that her husband couldn't stand. And I think she has an affair at one point in front of the... It's just awful stuff. There's another one where...
If it's just got an eye, what difference does it make what music is playing?
Good point. Can't remember the synopsis in detail, but I do know that the wife was tormenting this husband in the tank. And then there's another one where somebody's got some growth or other on the face, or it's going gangrenous. So they literally carve off this woman's lips into a V-shaped smile, cut out the gangrene without anaesthetic, and it sounds utterly nightmarish.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do horror, you shouldn't be holding back at all. Horror should be horrific.
But for the BBC in the late 60s, that's pushing their boundaries quite a long way. But it sounds so impressive, I would love to see it. I've ranted on enough. What would your first choice be?
Quantum Mass Experiment.
Oh, excellent. Where it all started for us.
And to a very large extent, where it all started for TV science fiction. There hadn't really been anything other than plays like The Time Machine or RUR before then.
Well, my second series is going to be A for Andromeda. There's one and a bit episode still exists from this six-part series. It was lovely. As we found when we compared it to the 2005 remake, there was no comparison. The 60s version pissed all over it from a great height. Just the way that they made things in those days. And I'll say this over and over till I'm blue in the face, that in those days they had to rely on the dialogue and the performances because the special effects weren't up to anything. So while the 21st century version looked gorgeous, it just didn't have any of the soul that the 60s version seems to have, and I'd like to see it back.
The most astounding thing about A for Andromeda is the plot. And, you know, you have science fiction written by the Astronomer Royal. The plot is going to be superb. Mm. And the whole message from the stars, translating it into mathematical formulae, translating that into a design for a computer, translating that into building creatures, ultimately building a person. That was brilliantly done and ripped off by Carl Sagan in Contact. And these days, most people seem to have forgotten A for Andromeda, but think Contact is the most brilliant thing ever written. Contact is a very clever plot, but the clever bits of the plot are A for Andromeda.
It's not the first time we've seen somebody rip off somebody else's idea as their own.
And won't be the last.
Your second series?
Doomwatch.
Oh, lovely.
I love, absolutely love Doomwatch. Ran for three seasons. The second season exists in its entirety, but not on its original transmission format. I think there are four or five missing from the first season, and the third season has only three existing episodes, one of which was the untransmitted episode.
The box set that was put out, was it Network that did that?
No, it wasn't a Network one. It was Simply Media.
Simply Media it was,
because it's a very basic release. They don't even put the episode titles on the DVD menus. It's just
2.1, which I found incredibly annoying, actually, because you have to look.
Yeah, if you're looking for a specific episode, it makes it a little bit more challenging. You look at the videos, there's not been any cleanup of it. It's crying out for a decent quality release. People laugh a lot about the ridiculous special effect of Robert Powell flouncing about with plastic rats
stapled to his pants.
And it looks ridiculous, but it's in the middle of an incredibly chilling story and really quite a horrific story. It starts off with a child being eaten by a rat and doesn't pull any punches going forward. And towards the end, you see somebody who has been ripped apart by the rats.
To the bone.
Mm. But conceptually, some of the ideas in Doomwatch were just utterly brilliant, as you would expect from Kit Pedler.
Yes, your third series. Good choice. Well, this one, I've wrestled with myself, but I think it's going to have to be The Avengers.
Okay.
I toyed with Adam Adamant because I was really blown away as soon as we started watching that. But we've done The Avengers in another podcast, Kinky Boots, as an episode-by-episode rewatch. And it's a crying shame that that first series is missing, because it's got quite a different flavour to it to the later ones. I think the ones that exist aren't the best examples.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were going to pick three episodes to survive from that, Girl on the Trapeze is pretty good. The other two are very much also-ran and, Dragon's Field or Death on the Slipway.
Those are the two that I think of straight away, yeah.
Dead of Winter. Now, the only problem with that is how will they compare to the big finishes?
Well, I've never worried too much about, for all that we both love radio and audio drama, the simple fact is that no matter how good it is, it's always going to be trumped in the priority stakes by the TV version.
Now, is it? You and I have a different opinion about this. I don't think the two then existing episodes should have been done as an audio, because they were always a pale imitation, because they were an imitation. However, the third episode that came back after Big Finish had done their adaptation from very little material, actually the Big Finish story is a better one than the televised one.
More coherent, certainly. And I think there's room for them to exist side by side. I get your point.
And we've discussed this a lot in Kinky Boots, so we're not going to go back over it, and I'm not going to explain again how wrong you are.
But as a complete series, I support Big Finish for what they do, but the TV version is always going to trump an audio version. largely because it's the original. Perfectly happy for them to exist side by side, as plenty of other adaptations of visual material have existed side by side on the radio. There's all the Poirots, all the Marples, all been done on radio as well as TV.
Yeah, but they're both television and radio, for those are adaptations of the written material.
Mm.
Whereas the Avengers, the visual is the original source material. Anyway,
we're drifting off. So your third choice.
Well, again, I was torn. I do love Adamant Lives. The ones I was torn between are R3, which was this sort of pre-Doomwatch, and the only BBC science fiction series that has no existing episodes.
So is that your choice?
No, it isn't. My choice is Out of the Unknown.
Oh, yes. I should have seen that coming, really.
The ones that survive, for the most part, are just utterly brilliant. Particularly season 2, Out of the Unknown. Although there's a lot from season 3 I'd really like to see. I don't think The Last Lonely Man is the best example of that series. I mean, I'd love to see something like Beachhead. Beachhead was considered good enough by the BBC to put forward for the Golden Rose at Montreux.
Explain that one to me.
It's a fairly prestigious TV awards thing.
Asshole. What is Beachhead?
Oh, yeah, it's about a planetary survey expedition that end up on a planet where their technology just stops working.
There was a lot of technology peppered through the Out of the Unknowns that we've seen.
Well, it's science fiction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lovely series. I've enjoyed every one of those. So lots of examples of our greatest hit so far, our 5th anniversary. So here we are, back in the viewing room, primed and ready. Is this story 5? Officially, they've not got any titles. These are all fan titles. Which one are we calling this?
The generally accepted title for this is Dr. McD Must Die.
Lovely. Well, I know nothing about this, so it's Ron VT.
Oh, well, sir. The Honourable Miles and Mrs. Captain.
Oh, there you are, you lovely people. We were beginning to think you quite deserted us.
We were just changing.
Come and meet everybody. This is Mrs. McD.
How do you do?
And Howard McD.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Champagne's awfully good.
And this is... Oh, dear. Poor Annabelle isn't well. I do hope she hasn't caught a chill.
Is there anything I can do?
I don't really know. Shall we go and see? Annabelle, are you still feeling cold?
Yes, don't you feel it?
No, I don't believe I do. This is Virginia Cavendish and Annabelle Harper.
How do you do?
Has she a temperature loss?
Yes.
Then she could be affected by time.
It's possible.
How do you do? You haven't been here before.
Yes. No, I haven't. Have you?
Oh, good heavens, yes. My husband's Arthur Maureen's deputy.
Something wrong?
No, not really.
Annabelle was just complaining of the cold.
On Midsummer's Day? Oh, my dear.
Steele?
Yes?
They're rather more than friends.
Right, well, that was Sapphire and Steel story 4, wasn't it? Mr. Steel Must Die, is that Snope?
Oh, it's story 5, and it's Dr. McD Must Die. Other than that, perfect.
Perfect, yes. So, what was the plot of the thing?
The overall plot of Sapphire and Steel is that they're two detectives who deal with problems related to time and have a variety of abilities to be able to do that. Although they look human, they're not human, and they quite often, particularly Steele, don't act particularly human. They tend to just appear when things start to happen or are about to happen. And that's what happens with this story. There is a party being thrown to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the founding of a large international company, Maureen International. And it's being held on the 21st of June 1980, with the company having been founded on the 21st of June 1930. So the chairman of the company, Lord Maureen, arranges for a party as they would have had in 1930. And a number of family and business associates turn up, all of whom have been given period costume to wear. Sapphire and Steel turn up, realise that there is nothing in the house that is manufactured later than 1930. Apart from one single door leading off the lounge, which leads to Lord Maureen's office. And there's a secretary in there who he's kind of equal parts patronising and a bit creepy and handsy with.
Mm-hmm.
As well as a whole load of other people. There is Lord Maureen, his sister Emma, his ex-business partner's widow, Felicity. And during the course of the party, things start happening that are specific to 1930. So they can see a church spire out of the lounge window. The church had been destroyed during the Second World War. They hear a test match on the radio, which is the test match from 1930, voiced marvellously by Valentine Dial.
Oh, yes.
And the people in the house forget what happened in 1980 and become more immersed into the world of 1930. And in keeping with Agatha Christie-type stuff, they start getting killed off one by one, with the youngest first, until you're left with just the people in the house who would have been there on that day in 1930. So that's Lord Maureen, his sister, Mrs. McDee, and the butler. Also there is Dr. McDee, Felicity's husband, Lord Maureen's business partner, who died in a fire on the 22nd of June 1930. And it turns out he was having an affair with Emma. Felicity found out about it. There was a big denouement. And Emma ended up shooting Dr. McDee by accident. By doing that, she destroyed all of his work. And what he was working on was genetically engineering viruses, which, had that laboratory not been destroyed, would have destroyed all life on Earth. So some sort of malignant entity had promised Emma a life of happiness with Dr. McDee if she went back and shot Felicity instead of George, not realising that that life of happiness would have been a day before they all died of horrible plague. So realising this, Emma is persuaded to shoot George McDee in the same way as that she did before. Time goes back on track. It's as though it all never happened. The end.
It was a bit good.
What?
I very much enjoyed that. I was put in mind halfway through of Chimes of Midnight. It's a Doctor Who story with Paul McGann, written by Robert Sherman. And I think at the time you did make the comparison with the Sapphire and Steel story. I'm assuming it is this one.
It was this one.
Yeah. There are certain elements that are comparable. So the deaths that aren't really deaths, and the people coming back from the dead, and et cetera, et cetera.
And the whole Edwardian house party thing. Now, okay, the Chimes of Midnight was below stairs rather than above stairs.
But there were definite comparisons to be drawn. Yeah. Sapphire and Steel's a bit of an odd beast, because of the ones we've seen so far, I have been impressed. But this went on for a few years, didn't it? There are only six adventures, but they were spread out over...
four seasons.
Yeah.
Season one, season two had two stories each. This was the only story in season three. And then the final story was a four-parter that comprised the whole of series four.
It's one of those things I'm surprised ever actually came back, because it's a bit weird.
Yes, but marvellously weird.
Oh, it is marvellously weird.
Have you heard any of the big finishes?
No.
Bloody awful. They're as bad as Missy or Adam Adamant Lives.
Oh, dear. Well, you see, the problem is that they recast it, and I really don't like recasting at the best of times. I know Joanna Lumley wasn't interested, and David McCallum, I think, lives in America.
He does. He's been doing NCIS for about the last 20 years.
Mm. So, bit of an ask to get them back to do it.
And PJ Hammond always said that he would be very happy to write more Sapphire and Steel, but only as a direct continuation from the end of the televised show with the two original principals, both of whom have said they're not interested in doing it and are a bit long in the tooth now.
Yeah, well, Joanna Lumley, though, she's immortal. She never seems to age. David McCallum's wearing well, to be fair. Particularly on audio, you've only got the voice, and people's voices do age. There's no getting around it.
I think you would struggle, one, with this style of story, because there are some absolutely beautiful... There's one particular tracking shot where it starts off with Sapphire and Steel standing in the lounge by the sofa, and the camera just tracks backwards and tracks backwards and brings into view all of the suspects one by one. That's absolutely brilliant.
But it is a great
shot.
It's
the sort of shot that you wouldn't get in a TV series now, because it must have been a good 30-second pan.
Possibly, because there was a scene to start with, and then the camera held on that scene and just pulled back and back and back. You're right, they wouldn't do that now. They don't like shots that go on too long.
And there was also a lot of the chunk of the dialogue between Sapphire and Steel that was done telepathically. And we've seen this in other episodes. But the visuals are just Steel staring off into space, Sapphire staring off into space, and all of the performance is a voice performance.
Well, we've seen this. Well, not quite like this, but we saw that. It wasn't Dead of Night, was it? Where they were all sat around the dinner table. The old Die of Starvation. What was that horror that we did?
It was Dead of Night.
It was Dead of Night, yeah. And there was one shot in that. It went on for about a quarter of an hour, and it was literally one shot of a woman giving a monologue. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was Anna Cropper.
Yeah, that's right.
It was brilliant.
They'd never do that now.
But that was animated and you could see that she was talking. Things like the end of episode one, where Sapphire's disappeared and Steele's trying to contact her. It might as well be a still image, the amount of animation that there is in that. But there's real desperation in his voice. It's purely an overlaid voice performance.
Because we saw that before in the one with the painting.
It's right the way through.
Oh, no, I don't mean that particular method of interaction between the characters. It does seem to play out in every story that we've seen. What I mean is there was a good long scene where they're both just stationary. It's purely mental interaction. There's nothing going on screen, actually. And that goes on for ages.
Yeah, and with the other agents that they see.
They see Led a couple of times.
They see Led once, they see Silver twice. Mm. There's certainly the telepathic contact with Silver. I can't remember whether there is with Led or not. And so a lot of this was a little unusual in terms of costuming because Sapphire almost always wears blue.
Yeah, and Steele always seems to wear a grey suit.
Yeah, but in this she was in a black evening frock.
Well, have we done Alumni yet? I don't think we have. Have you got any for us?
I do. Fairly obviously, Joanna Lumley was the Doctor in The Curse of the Fatal Death. She was Purdy in The New Avengers, Kate Swift in A Class Act, Patsy Stone in Absolutely Fabulous. She's Lady Joanna Constantine in Sandman and was a Bond girl. She's been in a million and one things over the years. David McCallum made his name as Ilya Kuryakin in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. in the 1960s. He was also the lead in the 1970s version of The Invisible Man. And for about the last 20 years, he's been playing Donald Mallard in NCIS and various spin-offs. And both of them appeared in the Cluedo TV series. She played Mrs. Peacock, he played Professor Plum.
Was that the one with Tim Curry? I remember making that up. Or was that the film?
That's the film Clue. Neither of them are in that. Mrs. Peacock is Eileen Atkins in that.
Oh, right.
And then there's Madeline Kahn, Leslie Ann Warren, the other two women in it.
It's been years since I've seen that. Anyway, who else?
Patience Collier was one of the leads in Who Pays the Ferryman. She was the villain in the pilot episode of Virgin of the Secret Service, behind a big mask with a bear. And she played Senora Mendoza in the Missing Avengers Season 1 episode Crescent Moon. Jeffrey Wickham was Webster in The Reign of Terror, was in the 1960s film The Breaking of Bumbo with Joanna Lumley. He's been in Black Mirror, The Champions, Jason King, was one of the leads in Object Z. He's been in loads of stuff. Jeremy Child was also in The Breaking of Bumbo. Edge of Darkness, he played one of the lead in Bird of Prey, the Richard Griffiths thing, which we really should do at some point.
I'm not familiar with that at all.
Oh, it's fantastic. I remember watching it at the time and absolutely loving it. He appeared in Doomwatch and he played Beamish in Fairly Secret Army. Peter Laird played Chang in The Wheel in Space and turns up in Sandbaggers Season 3 as the semi-regular character Tyler. Valentine Dial, the voice on the radio, was the Black Guardian himself, played the voice of Deep Thought in the TV version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, was the regular character of Dr. Kelderman in Secret Army, appeared in Blake 7, The Freewheelers, The Avengers, Miss Marple, and was a regular in one of the very first TV science fiction shows, Whirligig, and the story that they did called Stranger from Space. And he was the voice of the Man in Black in the Appointment from Fear radio series from the 1940s. Finally, Patricia Shakespeare isn't a Who alumnus, but she played the regular character of Polly Urquhart in Howard's Way, and that was her last acting credit. She started in Hancock's Half Hour, and she played a short-lived character in Coronation Street in 1960 called Susan Cunningham, who was the first girlfriend of Ken Barlow, a fellow student at university, and who went on to become the mother of his illegitimate son, Lawrence, which was a storyline introduced in 2010.
Right.
So a fair few alumni. Now, in terms of the acting, much of it isn't good.
One of the old ladies, and it's not the Patience woman, isn't good.
Nan Munro playing Felicity. Yeah, it's... I'm going to be generous and say that I think an awful lot of the acting was possibly done as a deliberate homage to the acting styles of the 1930s, which was a lot more staged and melodramatic. But realistically, I think they just had some bad actors in there because the young girl who gets murdered first was dreadful.
Yeah. They're not all hammy, but the certainly one of the old women, the other one's not terrific either, the young girl.
The wife that gets electrocuted is a bit...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cast-wise, not the strongest, particularly when anybody's in a scene with David McCallum or Joanna Lumley.
Well,
there's not one of them really that
can hold a candle. I mean, that's really damning with faint praise, because you would have to be very, very good. I mean, just sort of Kate O'Mara type good to be able to share a screen with Joanna Lumley and not come off looking worse.
Yeah, probably. But the little semi-dwarf that they got to play.
I don't think we're allowed to say that anymore.
What? Dwarf?
Yeah, it's a specific medical condition we're supposed to call achondroplasia. We're not allowed to say the word dwarf anymore. Very bad.
Is it?
Yes, it's like cretin. We're not allowed to say cretin, even though that's a specific medical description.
Yeah, so it's underused thyroid, isn't it? All right, the semi-normal-sized person, though. Yeah, even that sounds bad. Anyway, the diminutive actor that plays...
Lord Mulrain.
Yeah. Again, scenery chewing a lot of the way through, with this cigar that's bigger than he is. God, that cigar looks disgusting.
There was one scene where there was a shot over his head and all you could see was the smoke coming off the...
Oh, yeah, because you said, what's on fire?
And they pan back a bit and there's a whole character there that you hadn't noticed. Yeah.
I mean, on the whole, I did enjoy this thing. Of the ones that we've seen so far, that was the one I found most gripping, actually. Written, we have mentioned Don Horn, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly in the same style, but there was a subtle shift. I think this is the only one I've seen where they actually admit who they are.
No, the first one they do.
Right.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of talk about how their setup is and what other creatures have the ability to do the same thing that they're doing in the fourth series.
Right.
Which we'll do at some point.
Yeah, we'll do them out of order and just randomly. I'm sure there's a bad one in there somewhere.
There isn't. There's a very, very slow one on the railway station. Yeah, if that was edited down to half the length, you'd have a really, really good story. Because the end of that is horrible.
Yeah. We did, well, I certainly did. I sat through it while you cooked an entire meal. But you compared it to the War Games, the Doctor Who story.
Yeah, and I'm possibly being a bit unfair to the War Games there. You watch episode by episode of the War Games, it is absolutely spellbinding. You watch episode by episode of the Sapphire and Steel of the Railway Station, it is still slow. But it builds up to a really unpleasant end.
Well, you see, I can't think of... The only thing I've got from that particular story is six episodes in the middle of them wandering from place to place in the railway station, not knowing what's going on, asking each other what's going on, then walking to another place and not knowing what's going on, and then what's going on? I don't know yet. No, in a minute. For six episodes.
I mean, there is more to the plot than that, but...
It is largely that in the middle.
There is an awful lot of slowing down and padding, which they had to do because they had to double up the episode length because there was another four-parter that fell through.
Yeah, and it fucking well shows. It's a pity, really, because I think, and I've said this with a few things, that underneath it is actually a cracking good story.
Yes.
It's just spread really thin.
Yeah, far, far too thin. But we've seen that with Doctor Who stories where suddenly it's, well, we've got to fill an extra episode.
Yes. But anyway, overall, I did enjoy this, and I'm glad that we've done it. Appropriate way to mark our fifth anniversary of podding.
Yes, yes.
So on that note, boys and girls, I'm going to sign us off. Thank you for staying the course with us. We'd urge you to go out and try Sapphire and Steel if you haven't. This, I would recommend, actually, as jumping on point is the wrong thing. Because you never really get a full handle on what Sapphire and Steel are.
No, and I quite like that kind of fantasy element to it.
Yeah, you have to sort of watch it as just a story rather than trying to understand the backstory. Just take them as slightly weird investigators. But this wouldn't be a bad one to hop on with. That's the most watchable of the ones that we've seen so far, although I did like that painting one.
Man Without a Face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best one of the lot in terms of tight plotting. I love this because of all the Agatha Christie connections, and Sapphire and Steel is a fantastic TV series.
Mm.
It's very comfortably in my top five.
Really?
Yeah.
Crikey.
Doctor Who, Corridor People, Sapphire and Steel, Omega Factor, Doomwatch.
Yes, I thought that abomination would have to be slipped in the list somewhere.
That's no way to discuss Doctor Who.
Let's sign off. We shall be back very soon with something else, boys and girls. Thank you for listening. For those of you that have been with us since the beginning, you're saints, every last one of you. We'll be back soon. Ta-ta.
Bye now.
The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.